This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Love the scarf.
Thanks very much.
It's Alexander McQueen.
I know.
Signed it.
Enjoying this publicity campaign thing that you're on?
I don't mind these bits. It's quite nice. It's like a dinner party where I get too much attention.
You don't seem like the type that would shy away from attention.
Well, you say that, but actually, if this was a genuine dinner party, I'd be upstairs going, oh, can I not go? I don't want to go. Sam ill. Sam not well. Because, like, because my job is showing off, socialising I just consider to be more work. You know? This is just some work. That's that thing where I have to talk, isn't it? Yes, it is. Well, we've got to go. And you can listen as well. I like that also. I do like listening.
I am curious, though, when you do something like a Letterman or a Leno or a Conan, whatever show, how much do you prep for your segment, or do you sort of improv it the whole time you're going?
Well, the shows impose some preparation on you as part of their own preparation, because they need to feel secure that there is, you know, there will be content. But myself, I do not do any preparation. They go, what do you want to talk about? I go, I don't know, anything. And then they go, all right, what about this? And I go, yeah, that'd be all right. And then, I get very adrenalized and scared, I suppose, before a performance. And I think that energy, that fight or flight energy, is translated into neurological activity that I can then translate into anecdotes.
Now, Russell, there are so many elements in this movie that obviously mirror your own life, right?
There's
so
loads of elements.
Right, so was it challenging for you doing this in the sense that, you know, you've got the drugs and everything and the idea that you might relapse?
No, I didn't think I would relapse. It was interesting, actually. The props person who gave me pretend cocaine to take in one scene, which I don't think was in the movie, was himself 21 years clean. And I goes, what is this? And he said it looked like cocaine, and I had to snort it right up my uter. And he goes, this is organic matter. That sounds like the sort of that's the sort of thing you read on a Nestle label. What is this organic matter? Oh, nothing. We just, you know, we just killed some kids. What? Yeah, so, like, but to answer your question, like, addiction, being a drug addict and that, you have to, you know, I'm, like, in a daily program of recovery and everything, so I, one day at a time, I'm all right. But doing them things, it's more the emotional stuff, you know, when you get all, like, angry or shout at people, but, your body don't know that you're not serious. Apparently, you can tell your brain any old information, it will just respond to it. If you just keep telling your brain, that's why that power of that positive thinking, which some people say is mumbo-jumbo, and perhaps they're correct, but apparently if you just fill your head with positiva, it'll all be all right.
Well, does the amount of candor that you're able to have about your past, does that sort of like give you some control over it, or does the extent that people may feel comfortable asking you about even more intimate details than you're interested in?
It means that I have to take responsibility for where I want to draw boundaries around what I actually consider to be private. But I'm kind of comfortable doing that. I think by being like this sort of exposure that I had, I think initially when I first became famous in the United Kingdom, it was helpful because it meant there wasn't a spate of, this bloke's a drug addict, this bloke's fucked all these women, this bloke's... Because I was just making jokes about all those things already. So, like, it kind of made me sort of some kind of incorruptible, indefatigable, indestructible force. So it was a good idea. And also, I think it transposes those things from being stuff what makes you sad to sort of stuff that makes you laugh. And it, like, you know, because, like, all of those things that was, like, you know, there's some stories I tell on stage, and they're funny, you know, but, like, the things that was, you know, in the words of Morrissey, I can smile about it now, but at the time, it's terrible.
Well, in the trailer, there's a few sequences, in the commercials have been showing on TV, there's a few sequences that aren't actually in the movie, and Nick has said there's a bunch of stuff that didn't make the final cut. Were there certain scenes, or I heard the video, there's a really funny video that didn't make it.
Oh yeah, I am Jesus. Welcome to the church of me.
besides the video, were there other sequences that you were sad to see cut out, or... talk about, like,
in a sense, I actually, to tell you the truth, I would think, like, when I was younger, I used to, like, if I had to make some telly or something myself or something to send to a TV station, like, I would always make them too long. Now, because I was vain, you know, and think, oh, all of it's brilliant. Now, I think, like, it's good to be succinct. So, because I'm actually genuinely pleased with the film and think it's good, I think they've done a good job. You know, I would have done it really different because I sort of would have made me much more funny. They make me dead sad in loads of it, but they seem to know what they're doing better than I do, I hope. We'll see if the film is a hit. Otherwise, I'm going back into that edit and doing the Russell Brand version, which is just different shots of me just looking out of windows. So there is stuff that I think is really, really funny, but I can't question the job they've done with the movie because I rate them people. I think, you know, Nick's talented, man. So
Well, it's interesting because you have this stand-up background, so you sort of have your own thing that you do. And then coming to a movie, it's very collaborative, but beyond that, you're giving a performance, and then Nick takes it and does what he wants with it.
Difficult.
Is that hard for you? Is that sort of hard to let that go?
Because, as you say, as a stand-up comedian, you have this sort of absolute authority. People can say, we want to. Once you're up on stage, you can just go nuts, and I have done lots of times, and sometimes I get in trouble, sometimes with the police. When I was a drug addict, I got really badly beaten up on several occasions because I would just think, I'll just say this now. It's what I believe. And sometimes I know I was right about stuff I was saying. I was definitely right about the nature of consciousness and the nature of culpability, the way that we're all socially culpable for each other, and you can't demonise certain individuals, even the most extreme criminals. We have to take social responsibility. People don't want them kind of ideas in a comedy club. They just beat you up. I was saying that we all have to take responsibility for the notion of paedophilia, but I was unable to articulate it in a way that people thought was acceptable. Their response was much more to do this to my leg. That.
Ooh.
Yeah, I got really badly beaten up, thrown through a door.
Jesus.
Oh, luckily, I was on quite a lot of heroin that day. Didn't hurt. But what was interesting is to watch the blood go to the beat of your heart, pulsing, literally.
Wow.
Then I went to the Edinburgh Royal Infirmary. I wanted to get some, Edinburgh's a good place to get heroin in Scotland. And then I go to these kids, go and get me some heroin, lads. And I give them 40 quid up front. Never pay up front for heroin. Probably anywhere. There's probably very few places you can make advance heroin payments. we'll be delivering the heroin. Always no money down for heroin. Installments possibly, yeah, HP, high purchase.
I was reading about some incident that happened involving prank phone calls in England.
Oh, yes.
And I was sort of wondering the difference, because it seemed to me that wouldn't be a big deal over here. And I'm just wondering, like, what's the difference between doing the kind of stuff you do in England and here in the States?
This is a difficult question for me to answer. It's not difficult, it's just complicated. Here it is. That prank phone call, it was not the nature of the phone call itself, it was the nature of the sociological structure of the country that I'm from. We have a thing called the BBC. The BBC is publicly funded. The privately owned media want to destroy the BBC because it is brilliant. And they can. The privately owned media, mostly Rupert Murdoch, who I'm sure some of you, including, in fact, I work for him, I've written a book for HarperCollins just recently. So I've got to be careful. So, like, you know, the privately owned media want to destroy the BBC. They don't like me or Jonathan Ross at the Daily Mail, a powerful newspaper in the United Kingdom. They don't like us because we're both from working class backgrounds. I'm a former drug addict, and instead of dying, I've gone on and fucked everyone and made loads of money. That's not the story they want. Drug addicts are dead in gutter. That's drug addicts for the Daily Mail. Not a wise fucking who. Ah! It's confusing for their message. Plus, I'm innately anti-establishment in my behaviour and stance. So they want to destroy me. Then, like, the person who's answered. Now, the thing that was wrong that we did is we left a rude answer phone message on an elderly man's phone, but in my head he was still the character he played in a sitcom 30 years ago. I didn't think of the reality. He would play the character called Manuel in a program called 40 Towers, which I loved. Right, I just saw this man in a white waiter's jacket holding one of them silver things and they go like that. And that's what I thought I was leaving an answer phone message for, one of them silver platters. So, like, the thing is, I had sex with this dance troupe, and, like, one of that dance troupe was the granddaughter of this man. I was explaining that on the radio, actually in quite a funny way. And then Jonathan, we phoned up Andrew Saxon's aunt's phone, who's meant to be coming on as a guest, the man who played Manuel, ended up leaving this message. It was very silly and juvenile, but actually funny. Anyway, so, like, newspapers, as you know, you're all journalists, are dying. People don't need newspapers no more. So people get news from other sources. So newspapers need to campaign to remain relevant, and they have to have opinion. So the Daily Mail has to push these opinions, they have to campaign, and so that, there was this perfect storm. Jonathan Ross, they don't like him earning so much money. Me, they don't like what I represent. They don't like that he was an old-style comedian attacked by sort of younger folk. You know, so it became this big just conglomerate of lunacy. But to be honest, I found it amazing. It was like a sociological experiment. I like it if the news begins, the main news again, Russell Brand. I think, good, yeah, that is the main news. About time.
Is that the sanity in you then?
Yeah, I'm narcissistic, eh? I'm working on it because of I recognise that the self is a sort of construct, and if you take it too, it's all going to dissipate into nothing, isn't it? If you take it too seriously, you're fucked.
But isn't that the nature of comedy? You're being successful. You're challenging the structure, the social. I mean, it's.
Yeah.
I would think that it would be. You think that you're actually succeeding.
I think that I am. Because, as I remember, I used to be a penniless junkie, and now I'm not. Something's going right. I'm happy with it.
You're getting great enjoyment out of actually.
It's like, getting some good enjoyment, yeah. And I feel like I'm expressing myself. There are compromises, because it's not like when you're stand up and you just do what you want. You have to sort of trust other people. I don't generally like doing that, but you know, there you go. Basically, things are all right.
I'm curious, with the success you're having right now, is there a lot of debate for you, what is my next project or what is my next choice? Because it might impact the success I'm having, or are you sort of like, I'm going to stick with my gut with because it's been working?
Yes, I do the latter, because I know what I'm doing next. I'm starting Arthur in July, the Dudley Moore movie, you know, like that about billionaire got to get married for money or choose love fairy tale, you know. So I'm playing Arthur, I'm up for that, and that starts July. I'm doing it with Helen Mirren. She's got an Oscar already, so she must be brilliant. That's the way I see it. So, that'll be good, I think. So I'm still doing that. I've written another book. That's, you know, like 85,000 words. Isn't it boring writing on your own? Finished it, and that's coming out soon as well. So that will be happening. And I've got loads of films I've already shot. This thing where I'm the Easter Bunny called Hop. That comes out next year. So I have a thing called Despicable Me or Evil Me or something that I'm in that. That's coming out. The Tempest, which I've done with Helen Mirren, that's already been shot and coming out. Then I'm making a film Adam Sandler's producing where I play a con man posing as a priest called Bad Father, set in the South, here in the States. That I've got to make that next year. So I've got all sorts of different things. I'll carry on doing stand-up though because of the autonomy and the control and the authenticity it affords you. So things are all right as long as nothing goes wrong. I hope I ain't jinxed it.
Do you feel compelled to test your own boundaries in terms of doing things that are more dramatic or at least dramatically different from what you've already been doing?
I do not yet, because just be honest with you, like you say, the best comic actors ever, right? Charlie Chaplin, Woody Allen, Steve Martin, Richard Pryor, Jim Carrey, it's not Robin Williams, all like the biggest proper movie stars. It's not like they go, oh, and this week he's a French hunchback. Like, you want them to be doing stuff where you recognise them, at first at least, you know? And I'm like, this is like my first sort of significant part in a movie, first lead role, eh? So let's see if this works. And like then Arthur, so I think I'll stay within that palette. I can act, you know, I went to a drama school. I can pretend to have a different voice, a different height, a different head. All these things are possible, not that hard. Yeah, so it's just that this is the best thing to do at the moment.
Going back to the Arthur thing for a second, how much are you taking from the first movie, or are you guys doing your own path?
Very much our own path. I mean, as demonstrated by the decision to have the butler as a female nanny, played by Helen Mirren. You know, so that's already a distinction. We've taken some of the best lines from the script, but even that, I go, it's dodgy doing that. Like, there's some just such amazing lines in it that, what's that? Oh, how did you end up being a prostitute? My mum died when I was 6, and my father shot himself when I was 12. So you had 6 relatively good years. Oh, I'm willing to keep that. What can I say? I like that. So the spirit of it, like, you know, Dudley Moore, he's sort of innocent, isn't he? So you've got to have that innocent vulnerability. That's got to be maintained. And the sort of sadness of someone who's a drunk or whatever. And the optimism, the affability and all that. Keep all those things. But it's sort of different because it's a different time. Look at what's happening economically and all those things. A billionaire wish fulfillment. He can do anything. He's got so much money. I like that sort of stuff.
Well, it's funny because Arthur came out right at the end when you could be a cute, funny drunk.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You kind of can't be a cute, funny drunk
you
anymore.
Can't.
Now it's
serious.
Everybody has to change now. They have to like learn at the end of the movie and really go.
Yeah.
So are you going to have to do that, or are you going to still be able to be a cute, funny drunk?
Yes, no. You can't be, as you have correctly observed, attitudes towards alcohol have changed now. Now, being a drunk, it's not, hey, he's a lovable party guy. I think he's dead. He's really sad. I think that's why he's drinking. So there has to be sort of a more sophisticated approach to the problems of alcoholism, to which I'm obviously sensitive as a person in recovery, but I don't want to lose the fun. I like it when also in Arthur, what's it, oh, you're the guy of all the money, right? Yeah, what's it like? It's brilliant. Like, you know, you don't want to lose that. Yeah, like, you know, you don't want to lose that, but like, yes, you have to be a little more responsible, particularly like, you know, because studios and like the things are big conglomerates and that now, everyone's dead responsible. You can't have people rampaging around spreading the wrong message. Everyone's got to remain conditioned citizens at all costs, for God's sake, don't think.
Well, and I imagine there's going to be a really different sort of feel to the movie because in the original, now that you have a really attractive older woman as your nanny, that's probably a different...
Yes, it's a very different dynamic,
on.
Isn't it? Yeah. Because that's the thing about Helen Mirren is she's a powerfully sexual animal, even into like a, you know, sort of a part of her life where that would not be typical. What I'd like is for her to give me a bath. And I'm planning for that to be in the script. You know, when you find sort of women, or I don't know how it works with homosexuality, but like with me, what it is I want women that are like older to sort of look after me a bit, but then it goes a bit sexual. First of all, it's just, come on, you look really hungry, just have some, get in the bath, oh you silly boy, just wash it properly. Then it gets all sexy. That's what I want.
That sounds artistically valid.
I think that should be in the movie.
I think so.
It's valid.
Theo will really like that.
Oedipus. They will love this pitch. This will go in there as a gang. Tell them, look, we worked on this, and it made sense then, and it will make sense in the movie.
And he'll put his eyes out.
Yeah, they're going to struggle with that.
Back to the movie. What was the hardest part for you to shoot?
I don't like it. I have to shout at Jonah at one bit, and that made me feel a bit bad. Because like the bit where I go, give me a fucking drug, like we have to get intense with people.
That was a good scene, though. That was, I think, one of the best scenes in the film, actually.
Did you?
Well, yeah, because it showed another, you know, it showed actually how drug addicts are, like when they're not getting the drug, how they would react to somebody that is just
intense,
you know, the drug
it?
Comes first.
Drug yeah. comes first, fuck everything else. Yeah, no, like, and for, you don't, like, for me, it's tricky to revisit that, you know, that's obviously the reason I was able to hopefully bring authenticity to that is because I've been in that situation loads of times. People, when you're a drug addict, always tipping your drugs down the toilet, like, that's going to help. Just have to go and get more. Inconvenient. Like, people tipping stuff, emptying envelopes, dropping little bags. It's a nuisance. Pack it in. Because the best thing, you've got to have some therapy. You're not going to have, like, a Archimedes moment of, oh yeah, Eureka, thank God you tipped them drugs down the toilet. Also, I noticed that the water level rose, which is interesting as a side note. So I've had that stuff happen loads of times, so I remembered it and it made me angry, you know, but I don't like to get into that part of my character too much as a human being anymore, because it makes me feel sick. Like, afterwards, if I'd like, say, do you know, like, when you, this, I don't know if anyone's in recovery from drugs and alcohol, but if you shout at someone, like, say, like, when you're trying to get your phone to work and, like, they have to ring, it's even worse in your fucking country. Like, trying to get, like, the phone to work and, like, you go to the person, oh, sorry, I'll put you through with my supervisor. No, I want it done! Like, if I do that now, I feel really bad. Like, I feel like in my stomach, awful. So it's sort of now I've been crippled by some sort of cosmic empathy. So now I can't be mean. Even when I pretend to, I feel a bit bad.
So you're a really nice guy.
I'm pretty nice now. Pretty nice, out of selfishness.
Do you feel a sense of, maybe a greater sense of sympathy for the folks who are sort of corralling you and trying to get you into things, cause, like this character, like Jonah's character? Like, or are you just kind of like, I'll get there when I get there?
I became aware of the irony while making this film that there are people that have to fulfill that function in my own life, that there are people, please Russell, can you please, no, I'm just not getting up, I can't be bothered, no, I won't, you know, that there are people that have to do that job, like, not sympathy, awareness, I just sort of mused on it, whimsically.
Didn't change your behaviour then?
Absolutely not. But like I was in a smoking jacket. Oh, the irony. Like something that Dorothy Parker might have thought about. And just flicked some cigarette ash on the floor. Pick that up. Ah, you again.
Me again. One more question?
Russell, one last question. Are you affiliated to any charities? This is non-related to
me. Yeah, Focus 12, the drug rehabilitation centre where I myself got clean. I'm a patron of that charity in the UK. And the David Lynch Foundation for Transcendental Meditation. I'm affiliated to these causes. But also the ongoing revolution, but that's more subversive. We can't admit to that because otherwise we'll all be killed.
We'll put you down for breast cancer as well.
God knows I've contributed to that.
Thank you guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. All right. Why have you been marginalized?
See you on Twitter.